You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Prepare yourselves. You think Felton has been controversial before? I think it's only fair to warn you. If previous responses to my having preached on this topic are any indication, this may very likely be the most controversial message you have ever heard me preach. It has been the source of outrage, of veins popping out of foreheads, and nasty letters. So, are you ready? We begin by returning to Genesis 1, one of the most obsessed over chapters of the entire Bible. Let me remind you that Genesis 1 is just the first of two creation stories, the second of which is Genesis 2. Most scholars agree that Genesis 1 was written long after the Genesis 2 account, the one with Adam and Eve. So, you have the Adam and Eve story floating around a long time before the authors of Genesis 1 come along, probably during or shortly after the Babylonian exile, to put their unique spin on it. How do we know this? Well, the language is different, the style is different, the order of events are different. Plus, Genesis 1 is dripping with politics and theological propaganda, mostly aimed at dissing the Babylonians and their god, Marduk. Another element of Genesis 1, inconvenient to fundamentalists, is the portrayal of human beings being created. Unlike Genesis 2, where Adam is created first and Eve second, you'll notice in our passage today that male and female are created at the same time. Sorry, biblical literalists, but for our purposes today, the important thing to listen for is what these unnamed humans get to eat. And note, that is most definitely not meat. That goes for the critters, too. Meat is not on the menu. Period.
Our words of wisdom are from Genesis chapter 1, verses 27 through 31. So God created humankind in God's image. In the image of God, God created them. Male and female, God created them.
God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air, and over everything that moves upon the earth."
God said, "See, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is upon the face of the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food."
And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food. And it was so.
God saw everything that God had made, and indeed it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Back a few years ago, the Feltons were on a road trip that took us through Kentucky, so we had to stop at the over-the-top Answers in Genesis theme park, the Ark Encounter. Housed inside a full-sized replica of the Ark, as described in Genesis, is a museum explaining all the ways science and reality have gotten it wrong, and how fundamentalist Christians have it all figured out. Truth be told, the whole thing is such a fiesta of fabrications and barefaced lies that it is truly shocking. It's hard for me to talk about it without coming off like I'm mocking these poor souls, but frankly, there's a lot to mock. However, for the purposes of our theme today, I want to talk about how one of the biggest preoccupations of these biblical literalists, dinosaurs, reveals a fact about the creation story that most people miss. Just follow along for a second. Because these people believe that God created everything in six literal days, 6,000 years ago, God had to have created dinosaurs in Eden, right? So, in their minds, dinosaurs lived at peace among human beings. Here's a mural of Adam and Eve in what is evidently Jurassic Eden. That means when Noah built the ark, he included dinosaurs as passengers on board. So you might ask yourself, how is it that these huge beasts, many of them carnivores, sporting menacing mouthfuls of flesh-ripping teeth, could live alongside so many other vulnerable food sources? The answer? They were all vegetarian. Go ahead and laugh, but lo and behold, according to Genesis 1, God makes it very clear that everyone and everything, including the dinosaurs, supposedly roaming among the Garden of Eden, were vegetarians. So, what does a vegetarian velociraptor have to do with anything? Well, it's all a part of our next spiritual practice from Rabbi Rami, Echo Kashrut, or ethical consumption. Now, Kashrut means fit and is concerned primarily with the food you eat. You probably recognize that other word used for Kashrut, kosher, and it's everywhere. Sometimes it's obvious, like at this McDonald's in Israel, and sometimes not. See that little U in a circle symbol? That means the Union of Orthodox Rabbis have deemed that brand as kosher. So, where did this fixation on eating fit come from? Well, in our passage today, it's very clear. God says, "See, I've given you every plant-yielding seed that is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food." And it's not just humans. The next passage goes so far as to envision a vegetarian universe. "And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food." Well, if you're an originalist, then there's no getting around the fact that one of the Torah's primary commands to animals and human beings is, don't eat each other. But it's not just about your diet and being healthy. Vegetarianism is a practice designed to enhance your capacity for compassion. Back in the 15th century, Jewish philosopher Joseph Albo argued that vegetarianism had the potential to curb the human penchant for violence. If we're forbidden from shedding the blood of an animal, how much more would we be hesitant to shed the blood of a fellow human being? And the Echo Kashrut that Rabbi Rami describes then extends this whole concern for fit food to all consumables, ethical consumption of water, of mineral resources, of energy, the whole of creation. When I asked my friend Rabbi Shmuley Yanklowitz why, as an Orthodox Jew, he was a vegan, he said, "Veganism is far better for human health, far better for the environment, and most certainly far better for animals. We not only return back to the spiritual ideals of the Garden of Eden with such a diet, but we also transform the future, bringing us closer to global redemption." Wait, what? Global redemption? Ha ha ha! This is where you're going to tell us that the government is going to take away our cheeseburgers. Well, no, but look around. For centuries, people thought that the dominion in our passage meant that we get to control the ultimate fate of countless other animal species, not only the exotic and wild, but the utilitarian and domestic. The result has had measurable negative impact on our whole planet. The last century saw meat production and consumption grow exponentially in Western countries, and the consequences of industrial-scale meat production has compromised water supplies, soil, and the atmosphere. Back in 2006, the United Nations Food Agricultural Organization published a report called Livestock's Long Shadow. Even back then, it was clear that the production of meat was generating more greenhouse gas emissions than all forms of transportation combined. At the same time, studies have shown that a vegetarian diet is, in fact, healthier for human beings. Meat-free diets lower the rate of cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and other serious health problems. Researchers at the University of Chicago determined that moving from a meat-based diet to a vegan diet actually saves more energy than swapping out your SUV for a hybrid. John Snigaki of Xavier University has written, "Choosing a vegetarian diet is a powerful way of modeling God's love through nonviolence, compassion for animals, care for the earth, care for our bodies, and responsible use of the earth's resources. But Americans are resistant. This is not an idea we've grown up with. People start getting really bent out of shape. Meat is about some people's identity. Have you seen the bumper sticker? Eat beef. The West wasn't won on salad. So culturally, it's hard for many of us to get over the idea that there's even an alternative to being omnivores. Them vegetarians and vegans are just some far-fetched, made-up, bleeding-heart liberal abomination." Wrong, bacon breath. If you actually read your Bible, vegetarianism is the clear, if ignored, biblical ideal for human beings. In both the idyllic world of Eden and Revelation's vision of the New Jerusalem, animals and humans are vegetarian. Even Isaiah foresees a return to a vegetarian world where the lion, the lamb, and the little child can all peacefully coexist. So, although it has surely never reflected real human behavior, Genesis claims that humanity, along with every other creature, was created to be vegetarian. It's only after one of the authors of Genesis has all the animals safely off the ark that God changes the rules and permits Noah to become the first carnivore. But God isn't happy about it. God keeps trying to steer humans away from meat. In Numbers 11, the people recently escaped from Egypt are living on manna in the desert, said to have resembled seeds of some sort. But folks are whining constantly. Moses finally confronts God and accuses God of having gone back on God's campaign promise of providing meat for their journey. So, in a fit of pique, God provides flocks of quail for the people to feast on. But hang on. While the meat was yet between their teeth, before it was consumed, the anger of the Lord was kindled against the people, and the Lord struck down the people with a very great plague. Therefore, the name of that place was called Kibroth Hataava, Graves of the Craving. When the people who didn't die from eating meat arrived in the Promised Land, it was presented to them as a meatless land of milk and honey, plenty of wheat, barley, vines, and figs. No meat. And so it goes throughout the Bible. Even in the Shabbat prayers that Jews hear every week, Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, blessed is the source of life, the fountain of being, by whose power the earth gives birth to grain, vegetables, fruit, and vine. Note the lack of meat. Rabbi Rami notes that in traditional Judaism, the rules surrounding the practice of eating meat are so difficult that the actual consumption of meat was, until recently, quite rare. But today, meat is a part of most of our everyday lives. So, the practice of ethical consumption can be a challenge. But it's not an all-or-nothing practice. You can start small or aim to be somewhere on the vegetarian spectrum. Rabbi Rami says he hasn't reached the ideal himself. He still eats fish, which makes him a pescatarian. So maybe you could try abstaining from just one thing to practice. Abstain from shellfish? Maybe you could go big and abstain from beef? I know my family has been very faithful to its pledge of abstaining from the eating of liver. No problem. But see, this is where people get all bent out of shape. How dare you tell me what I can or can't eat? Vegetarianism is dangerous. Don't you know Hitler was a vegetarian? So being a vegetarian can lead to genocide. Okay, well, look, I'm not telling you what you can or can't eat. I'm just telling you what the Bible says. Take it up with the authors if you're upset. In the end, I think the big question is, WWJE, what would Jesus eat? Well, definitely fish and lamb at Passover, but there's no other mention. And it's important to remember that there's more to this Echo Kashrut than your diet. It's about being aware of your food in a way that helps you see yourself as part of the great web of life. The next time you sit down at the table, pause for a second and consider what's on your plate. That slice of bread was once a grain of wheat. It's the product of soil, rain, sun, and seasons. These depend on larger systems, planet, solar system, universe, and none of it would be possible without the planter, the harvester, the processor, the baker, the packager, the shipper, and grocer. A single slice of bread contains a lesson in our interconnectedness with the whole of everything. Many of you will remember our Horizon Stewardship consultant and friend, Don Smith. He took up being a vegetarian about 5 years ago. And what convinced him? He said Father Richard Rohr's devotionals about all of creation being connected finally whipped me into submission. Echo Kashrut is not just about food. It's about the connection. It means taking into consideration the environmental impact of what you use, what you purchase. It's about respect. Jews are obligated to treat all things, animate and inanimate, sentient and non-sentient, as manifestations of God. Can we do the same? Henry David Thoreau, that great American icon of getting back to nature, wrote in Walden, "Whatever my own practice may be, I have no doubt that it is part of the destiny of the human race. in its gradual improvement to leave off eating animals. As surely as the savage tribes have left off eating each other when they came into contact with the more civilized. Is it destiny? Is it aspiring to an ideal that the human race has never really practiced? It's without a doubt healthier for us as individuals and beneficial to the planet as a whole. The rest is up to us to decide. And if this doesn't sound very religious, remember, spiritual practice is not about meditation and spiritual awakening. It's about being mindful about your actions and interconnectedness with creation. As a result, you might just become more aware of the whole world as a manifestation of the divine. Be well. And I see you. Put down that hot dog.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.